This is Aaron Eisenberg. I played Nog on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi. I'm not a woman, but I'm talking sci-fi, so it's a little confusing. So just bear with me.
Hi, this is Eugenia Shapiro.
And this is Jerry Donaldson. Welcome back to another episode of
Women Talk Sci-Fi.
And today we're going to talk about...
It's cold outside.
No kind of atmosphere. All alone, more or less. No, we're not. We're both together here. So we're going to talk about Red Dwarf. For those of you that don't know and haven't listened to our podcast, which you should do, go back. It's an English sci-fi comedy, and it's very funny. It's been around for a long time.
Since the 1980s, in fact.
And it's one of those English-type programs where go away for a few years, come back again, go away, come back again.
And they did have quite a break for, you know, a number of years, because they only do six episodes a season. So it's not a long season, but it's just been in the mindset, especially of Australians and English people.
Well, UK and people.
Yes.
Let's not forget the Scottish and the Welsh and
true.
The Northern
and everybody
Irish.
Else that's around there. The Commonwealth countries. It's part of our psyche. It's been on our TV screens.
Since the beginning. And I think it's gaining popularity even in the States now. There's a lot more people who have known Red Dwarf as opposed to some of the shows they never ever saw that came out of the UK or any other country. In fact.
So it's... sort of a sci-fi show, but it isn't, because it's set in the future and...
way in the future.
Yes, and there is a human cat on board.
Well, there's a cat that's involved.
Yes.
There's a human, a cat, a robot, and a hologram.
But all the issues they come across are more everyday issues rather than being shoot, you know, bam-bam type things that you would find in Star Trek or Stargate.
Occasionally they have a shoot bam-bam thing, and some of the issues are pretty weird.
Yes.
I mean... Sofa's chasing you is pretty weird, and because they have sort of replicant kind of things happening. Then they've got strange robots who want to take over the universe.
It's a great show. I love it.
It's very funny, and it's very entertaining, and it's something that is unusual in terms of... I don't see any other sci-fi show that actually goes that way. They've tried, but it hasn't been as successful.
Well, they did try a pilot in the U.S.,
which is pathetic.
Absolutely pathetic. And our own Terry Farrell was actually in it.
It's
from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, from DS9.
Yeah, but God, it was bad.
I think you can catch it on YouTube somewhere. So if you look
it's
for
a very bad copy.
US
but
Red Dwarf pilot.
Yes, it's bad because I think...
So
as
please, I was going to say, don't take it as what the UK one is, the US one is.
And just recently they've released season 11 and 12. So what they did was in season 11, they did a back-to-back episode. So Craig Childs was talking to us and saying, you know, while everyone was here, we thought we'd film another series and then that way...
it's done.
It's done because trying to get them all back again, because all of them are involved in different things all over the place and not all of them are even involved in TV anymore. So it was... a matter of getting them back together. But when they're back together, they haven't lost their humour and their charm.
No, and you can see they get on quite well and they have good fun while they're actually making it. And Danny John Jules, who plays Cat, is very good as the Cat. He's an elegant dancer because his background is a dancer. And he's, as cats are, very narcissistic and very self-interested. The robot is very subservient. The hologram is just an obnoxious prat.
Yes.
Of the English type. If you know, the English sort of Hooray Henry.
Upper class.
Pretending middle class. Who wants to be upper class prat.
True.
And then
Mr. the Slob.
Liverpoolian. Mr. Scouse.
Yes.
From Liverpool.
He's just the slob.
Yes. But he's the heart of the whole show.
He is. And they all just blend so beautifully together as a crew, you know, and the interactions between them, the lines are really witty, the situations are quite bizarre at times. But, I am quite happy to sit down with, apart from Series 10, Series 10 is when they came back.
A bit weak.
Well, they tried a different format in the way they even filmed it.
It was outside of an audience. It was outside in the real world.
Mm. And it didn't really work
as well.
Whereas when they came back after that, it was brilliant. And seeing that, as again, Craig Charles, when we were talking to him, saying he's been Lister longer than he's been his own name.
Yes.
You know, he's played this character longer than he's actually had his own name. So it's quite amazing, really.
And it's very atypical of English humour, though.
Oh, it is. And they do it so well. And English, I think, have always done humour well. They can do comedy very, very well. And I think that's part of it. And Red Dwarf was one of those ones that I know I just found by accident flicking through our national television station late one night, thinking, oh, you know, what's this? And then when you sit and you start listening to it and it's going, well, this is hilarious. You know, this is just great stuff.
The premise of the show, I suppose you can say, is that somebody was put in the brig on a spaceship because he found a cat that was actually astray and then brought it on board the ship, and he didn't tell anyone, and then when he was found out, he was put in the brig, and one of the other characters actually hit the wrong button and there was a whole nuclear thing happening, and then the universe disappeared. Basically, because he was locked in the brig for 1 million years or something. So Earth supposedly doesn't exist. He's the last human. The cat has had so many generations because it was pregnant when it first came on board.
Mm-hmm.
And this has now evolved into a sentient being, as opposed to a fully sentient, intelligent, talkable, walking being who loves little fishies. Fishies. And so on. And it's the adventures of that. And they can travel in time and they can travel into different universes and they travel
onto different planets
and all that kind of thing.
And find other spaceships.
Which was always weird, seeing he's supposed to be the last human in the whole universe.
That he finds humans along the way.
Finds humans along the way. But then again, don't they always do that?
So we've got some really great interview, actually.
Well, we did. We can't really call it an interview because we were sitting there interviewing Holly, who's the computer on the ship, and the next thing Craig Charles comes along is an audio bombs us.
Yes.
So we just let them chat.
That's it. And so for the 20 minutes after that, we didn't say much at all.
No, and we were quite entertained just sitting listening to them too. It's always good when you don't have to interview someone in an interview. They actually do it all for you.
So Norman Lovett, who plays Holly, and Holly is, in this case, male, but there is a female Holly as well, who takes...
Because he's a computer, he can change his face.
That's right. He can change his desktop, no problem.
But he's senile.
Oh, yeah.
Because he actually was the smartest computer in the world or something at once. He had a 6 million IQ.
Yeah.
Now it's down about 60.
And he's Norman Lovett is a comedian, actually, rather than an actor. And he's got a very dry sense of humour, extremely dry, and even his...
Very English sense of humour.
Yes, and his... I don't know if the word's droll, but he's very...
He reminds me, if you've ever read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it reminds me very much, here I am, a computer with a, you know, the brain the size of a universe, and I'm opening doors. So Marvin from Hitchhiker's, that sort of kind of sardonic kind of...
It is, and I went to his comedy show because we had him here in Adelaide. So I went to his comedy show... And he can make people laugh just by the fact that he brings out a plastic bag and talks about a plastic bag. I mean, like, he is probably the most boring personality that can make the funniest jokes possible.
That's a stick, isn't it? That's his. He's found that that's a way to make – actually, he's not a boring person because we chatted with him and he's lovely.
That's right. He is lovely.
We're lucky enough to spend the day with him. So that was really lovely. So we're not saying he's boring.
No, but that's
but
the sort of...
his persona and his comedy.
His comedy is sort of like he's... It's like you're watching someone who's on Valium. You know, like they just... He's just slow.
Very chilled.
Very slowed down, very chilled.
Maybe even something slightly more illegal.
Possibly. But I don't know. But his comedy is... And that's what he comes across as Holly anyway when you watch the show. But when he's with Craig... Oh, it's
well, it was
just
lovely,
funny.
Actually, because they reminisced a lot.
Yes.
About what it was like to be on the show over all of those years and working together and working with the other guys. So although this is an interview, it is actually very much in terms of a historical record of some of the times they spent together, which is really nice.
That's it. So with that introduction, I think it's time that they just have a listen to the pleasurable time that we had with them.
Here we are with Norman Lovett.
Norman Lovett.
Otherwise known as Holly.
Yeah, that's the thing that... I'm a stand-up comedian, but, I mean, that's the thing that I'm, well, known for anyway, you know, so I suppose unless I do something else before I drop dead. That'll be the thing of when I die.
Here lies
bit,
Billy.
Yeah, but a bit of me will still be alive.
Well, it will. Will.
So forever. That's quite good, isn't it?
And when you actually think the transmission has gone into space and is now travelling through space at the speed of sound, someone else out there knows that Holly. No one love it.
No, they don't.
You don't think there's anyone
you,
out
are
there?
Are you a Jehovah's Witness?
I'm hopeful that we're not the only one.
But Norman, you came to stand-up comedy rather late in life compared to other people, didn't you?
Yeah, I started when I had, you know, something to talk about at 32. Yeah, it's quite late. You get a lot of comedians today start when they're very, very young. But well, there's still comedians. Kitty did a bit of stand-up. Went to my youngest daughter when she was 10 at one of my shows. She did a five-minute spot and it went into 10 minutes and she was still in the show when she was 10. She was very funny. And then so now she's 24 and she's an actress, as is my eldest daughter. And I said, why don't you do some stand-up as well? She said, oh, I did it. I've done it.
Oh.
Did it when I was 10. I said, oh, fair enough. So you can, I think you can still... Nothing's going to stop. If you're funny, you're funny, aren't you? You know, whatever age, you know.
So what were you doing before that? That
well, made jobs.
You
just
change your
jobs.
Mind.
I always was a fan of comedy. I just loved it. Comedy and music. I love music as well. I'm talking about...
The 60s and 70s?
Yeah, I'm talking about popular music.
Comedy in the UK was big in the 60s. I mean, they were superstars, the comedians.
Well, no, well, yeah, you're talking about Tony Hancock and then
all of that era.
Monty Python coming. Yeah, it was huge. It was Frankie Howard and Tommy Trinder and Max Wall. One of my heroes, Max Wall, who I met and was a disappointment.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
It's always sad, isn't it, when you meet...
A miserable old git.
When you see...
But I did a thing. I was 40. I think I was 40 and he was 80 and I watched him do... One of Beckett's plays, the Crapstar's Tape. Is it Crapstar's Tape?
I think so. Yes.
I watched him and he was great. He's great for Beckett and stuff. And then I met him afterwards and I said to him, I started talking about Max Miller and he said, Max Miller, what would you know about Max Miller? You weren't there. And he spoke like that. He had quite a comedic voice. And I said, well, I just listened to it. It's from 1938, before I was born. I said it, and I was transported to the actual live performance of it. You know, I thought, well, this is going really well. And then I told him I'd had a heart attack. I had a mild heart attack when I was 39, and I made a sort of joke about it. He said, heart attack's not funny. I said, it's my heart attack. If I want to make a joke about it, I will. And that, and it was incredible. The producer had introduced me to him. He was in the distance looking and laughing his head off. He was laughing. And I thought, don't meet your heroes. It's so true. And he died within 3 months of me meeting him.
Was it your fault then?
Yeah, well, this is it. I've met four famous people who have died within 3 months of meeting me, and one of them is Roy Orbison.
Really?
Oh, really?
I met him at Manchester because he stayed at the same hotel where we stayed when we were recording Red Dwarf, and I went up to him and shook it. I said, thank you for the music, very briefly, you know, and he died within 3 months. Harry Worth, another very funny comedian, lovely man, he died within 3 months of meeting me. Max Wall, I've just spoken about, and Bob Crowe, a union man, Labour man, who... I met him and he died as well within 3 months.
So it's lucky we're not famous then. So you probably won't die within 3 months.
Actually, what I'm doing this for, I want to get this round so stop famous people coming up to me. I don't want to meet them because I hear a lot of them aren't very nice. No, that's not the face. But it is quite, it was quite funny that in a way. But when he died, I felt, apparently he fell a lot of, older people, well, I'm 70 now, you do worry about when you're going down steps falling and that's what he did. He fell and hit his head on a concrete step coming out of Soho after having lunch. But when he died, I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel, oh, that's sad. I felt it's probably best.
Mm.
You know, if you're going to be that miserable, it's probably best that you just leave.
Leave, yes.
Just leave.
Life's too short to be bloody miserable,
isn't it?
It
was... He had a great big chip on his shoulder. And also it helped me to think, if a young comedian, I get young comics come up and sort of nice. If people come up to me, I'm always talkative, I'm always nice and helpful. Or, you know, And that taught me a lesson of saying, don't, as you get older, don't become like him.
Mm.
And I'm sure I won't. I'm 70 now. I'm sure when I'm 80, I'll be pretty much the same guy. So, yeah, just... Anyway, sorry, that was a bit...
No, that's fine.
Low, wasn't it? Below the belt, really.
Comedy's a hard job. It's not an easy job.
Yeah, it is. I like to treat it as... I've always tried to think of it as not a job and something I've been able to do naturally, but it is work. And, of course, the most successful comedians work damn hard, which I don't work damn hard, so I don't know if I'll ever be the most successful comedian, but I'm happy with the way I play it. I'm happy.
Do you plan your comedy, or does it just come out alive?
Well, you just got to write down the... any ideas you have, and I do ad lib a lot, but I don't do the whole show on ad libbing and stuff, but you do come out with stuff. And I mean, a lot of people record every performance they do and any ad libs that have come through, and I just don't do that at all. I try to remember them and write it down. Oh yeah, I spoke about that, I must remember to do that. And you've got your little books and you write them all down. Yeah, but I just want to enjoy it, you know. I should work harder, but I'm a lazy git. It has to be said, I'm quite lazy. So,
which takes us on to Red Dwarf. As in, all you had to do was your face, you know,
yeah.
And acting. Was it hard?
No, not really, no. The hard bit was, it was a voiceover first, and I wanted it to be visual, and I moaned and moaned until I got my way. And the only thing is getting rid of the neck,
so you wouldn't see it.
We've been interrupted by someone. Who are you? Who are you, mate? I was telling him this is the thing. This is why I don't want to know the famous people, because they're pain in the arse.
The unfortunate thing is 3 months and 29 years later, and you're still here.
Yeah. Well, when we first started, we Craig was 23. That's Craig Charles, as if you didn't know.
Yeah,
he was 23. I was 41. So that was. I was the oldest, he was the youngest, yeah. I still remember it now. You played ping pong. Not ping pong. You played like the
drums on your head.
Drums on my bald patch.
Bongos on your head, yeah.
I thought, if we're either going to get on well or we're going to be at war here. We got on really well, you know.
Were you on the set together then, or did you
used to rehearse 5 days?
Well, we rehearsed around a table, yeah. But on the night when we recorded it.
We used to have the recording, the rehearsal studios, and they put all this tape on the floor to show you what room was, you know, yeah. Where was the card and what was it. We used to ignore all that stuff.
Well, that didn't apply. And it didn't apply to me at all, so I just sat there in front of a bored cameraman. And I never saw the audience. All I could see, I could just hear them and do my lines, but I could hear the audience and still time your jokes to the
laughs.
So great. Having an audience in front of you, does that make a difference to how you react?
Yeah, it's great.
We tried to do it without an audience, but we did series 9. People didn't seem to like that at all.
No, the canned laughter. You're not a canned laughter people.
No, it wasn't. There was no canned laughter on series 9. There was no laughter at all. It was just kind of...
After the BBC had chucked.
We did that when they came back to Coronation Street and got
back to Earth. I was. That's where I fell out with them again, because they put my name down for that. Be prepared, and they never let me know. It was just about to start in a couple of weeks. I said, "Am I doing this or am I not?" I got really cross. They said, "Oh, we just got the scripts. No, you're not in them." And I said, well, that's the last time. This is it. I will never work for you again. That's it. I've had enough of you lot messing around.
You had a strange journey, because you went away, came back.
It wasn't my fault, though. I mean, it just wasn't. When I left, it was purely their fault. They could have resolved that, but didn't.
A lot of egos there at the time.
Sorry?
A lot of egos at the time, you know what I mean?
I think not the cast.
No, not with those.
No, the people that run it, the bloke behind the scene, who thought he was...
A lot of power trips going on and stuff like that.
Oh, this is the way... I mean, we couldn't even make that film, that movie. That really annoys me. It's a good script. And we couldn't even make that.
Doing it on tour, you know.
Yeah, I heard of that.
As a stage show.
Red Dwarf the movie as a stage show.
That would be fantastic.
You should have a musical part to it, too.
Oh, well, so that Danny can get up and dance.
Yeah, exactly.
We could all go to the pub then for a little while, you know what I mean?
And then you have
a quick livener.
Have a
snifter.
Sing along with the bouncing ball for the theme song. Yeah. Get the audience sing it at the same time.
These are good ideas. Shut them down.
No, I've been through it all before with films and bloody live shows.
But you could turn it into the Rocky Horror style Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
Hey.
In movies and theatres.
I don't know.
You heard it here first.
You know, you're still all young enough to do it, and I would like, it'd be nice to know that there's going to be a film of some description. I hope they do.
Well, you only have to sit there.
Oh, I'm all right. I can pre-record my bit, so I don't even have to be there. No, you have to, for a live audience, yes, you've got to be there to time your jokes.
No, you wouldn't want to do it without us. You'd want to go on tour with us one last time. One last hurrah, mate. Yeah.
You could turn that all over the world.
No, I'm still going.
Imagine all the groupies and the hookers, mate, the cocaine and the cannabis with you, me and you.
That is the problem. One of the problems I had was women, you can imagine.
You know, we'd just burn them off with cigarettes, didn't we?
And just look at this. Still got it now, you know.
It's just a magnet.
People listening to this, obviously, well, my voice also does things to people as well.
You're like Leonard Cohen of the Dwarf, you are. And he's dead.
Yeah, he's gone.
You didn't see him 3 months ago, did you?
No. Did you hear about the people I met that died within 3 months of meeting me? Max Wall.
Oh, wow.
Roy Orbison, who I met at Manchester in that hotel. You remember? Did you meet
him? I remember meeting him, because I thought he was blind.
No, I
thought he was... And then all of a sudden, I felt really cheated. Imagine feeling upset that someone can actually see.
Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles, you get him confused.
No.
Just because of the shades.
Because Roy Orbison always wore those dark glasses. He was blind. No. And all of a sudden, he was looking all about, and I felt cheated.
Anyway, I met him.
I haven't put any money in the blind box ever since. I think they're all lying bastards.
I don't know whether I should count Bob Crowe, but I met with Bob Crowe, worked with him, did a gig.
Who's Bob Crowe?
Bob Crowe, the union man from Labour, who did the underground.
Oh, okay.
But he quite young, he died in his 50s. He was nice.
They all died. He's just a killer.
That's right. Don't shake his hand.
It's the conversation.
Nah, it's weird. Life's weird, isn't it?
So did you get the part in Red Dwarf because of your droll sort of sense of humour, or how did you get the
part? It wasn't my looks, because it was a voiceover. but I did read for Rimmer, and I read it with a young guy who was Lister, actor. I can't remember his name.
Someone good.
Hugo Daly something.
I don't know, mate.
Yeah, young bloke who used... Yeah, he's... And I read with him... And as I was reading Rimmer, I thought, no, this isn't me. But I went through with it. And then they said, come on and read for... And I read Everybody's Dead Days. And they were all laughing their heads off. And I thought, oh, this is going well. And I got that. So that was how I got it. I remember sitting at the table. It was just Rob and Doug and Jackson, I think. Paco Jackson. Get back to
Zed Bynum there now.
Oh, I don't know. He must have been there.
So were there a few people for your part as well?
My part was given to Alan Rickman at first.
Really?
Or Fred Molina, one of them they were cast.
It was a thing of John Lloyd, I remember. John Lloyd, who did Blackadder.
Yes.
And I think it was one of his suggestions to Paul Jackson that don't use real actors. And it was the greatest bit of advice they ever got.
You're not a real actor.
None of us.
I was a poet at the time.
Stand-up comedian, Chris impressionist, Danny Hoofer, dancer and singer on the stage. You know, it was perfect.
Hoofer. He said Hoofer.
Did I say Hoofer?
I thought he said Puffer. Hoofer.
I've got jet lag. But I mean that was, you know, you couldn't write it, you know, you couldn't got well away from acting.
Although they did.
They did. No, they
couldn't write it, but they did.
He laughs at his own jokes.
I know. I'm the only one though.
So they start writing for you as they started to pick up your sense of humour and that sort of thing.
I think
me and Norman, I think, and Chris, you were cast first, I think.
Yeah, I think with me they knew my stand up, they knew what was like in real, you know, I could moan and be sarcastic and cheeky, and that all got into it through knowing me. Yeah, and I think they spent a lot of time with us all And that helps when you're writing for a character as well.
I think they spent a lot of time trying to get me not to do it, to be fair, because they're Robin Doug are both from Manchester, and they created this anti-hero, Dave Lister, and I'm from Liverpool, and the antagonism between Liverpool and Manchester is like probably the biggest between any two cities
Rangers,
that kind of thing. and they didn't want the hero of the piece to be a Scouser, so they really looked hard and far and wide before they went off.
But he was so good of a character. It was, you know, you'd be a fool to turn it down to send him away.
Well, 29 years later, here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Still doing it.
And who was the first Kachansky?
Yes.
Was a Scouser. No, the first.
Oh yeah,
was a Scouser.
Alexander Pig.
And I'll never forget. To me, she is Kachansky because I saw her rehearsing it. Yeah. A Scouser.
And then there was a strike, and she couldn't do it anymore.
She was doing that film.
Letter to Brezhnev. And there was a strike.
God,
and
I bet she must be thinking, oh God, I could have done that.
She could always come back.
Sci-fi. You never die in sci-fi.
And then you turn into a woman.
That's right.
And all of a sudden got funny. Did you see that? How did that happen?
Yeah. And she
had
hair.
Yeah.
They just try and put me down. You know, they know damn well I'm getting big laughs. Jealous, and they continuously try to chip away at me.
They're all dead, Dave. I mean, everybody knows they're all dead, Dave.
I've only got to say that. We were talking to a bunch of people, the guests, and I said, I wouldn't mind having everybody's dead name on my tombstone. But there's another line I did in my stand-up, was, no man's an island except when he's having a bath. Mm-hmm. I like that line as well. I might put them both on. If there's any room, I'm going to be cremated.
Well, we can write in tiny font.
Yeah.
So, Red Dwarf.
What's that?
Never heard of it.
No. Is it something that is as iconic to you as actors as opposed to iconic to us as the watchers? Do you know what I mean? Is it?
I think it's career-defining for us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of career-defining. I mean, I've gone on to do lots and lots of things, big shows.
I haven't.
But everyone, but like, you know, there's a pecking order. But like,
if you really want to have a go at me, point to my career. I'm a stand-up comedian. I mean, that's what I have done.
But no matter what the big things I've done, people still remember Dave Lister. You know what I mean?
Yes.
No one could go on and do anything, but people will always remember Holly. So I mean, it's kind of career defining, you know. So you've got to accept that and fan space. You've got to enjoy that. Do you know what I mean? I'm not actively seeking to put him to bed or to be remembered for other things.
No, it's good that you have that.
I mean, being remembered for one thing
is
like, you know,
because just, Chris Barry years ago in a hotel room, I said to him, Chris, what a great... If your career ended tomorrow... I said, what a career. And he looked at me and went, not really, Norm. They're never satisfied.
But it's like Doctor Who,
never satisfied.
Red Dwarf. Mm. I mean, it's of that ilk, isn't it? I mean, it's... And it's well-known throughout the world, and it's one of the British shows that have actually broken the Atlantic barrier, if you want to say that. I mean, there are not many British shows across the pond.
I suppose doing so much of it, not as much as Doctor Who. I mean, having lived 13 Doctors for Christ. But
I don't know. There's
12. 12. Is how many? Would you count 9? How many episodes have they done?
Well, that's not called. That's not. That was never called Red Dwarf 9. That was
65 episodes.
I wanted to call Red Dwarf 10. Red Dwarf 10. The Search of Red Dwarf 9. That's what I wanted to call it. And they wouldn't let me. It was like, Red Dwarf 10,
Red Dwarf 9. Back to Earth was weird.
But I thought the story was brilliant.
Bloody Coronation Street.
How cool is that, though? I mean, arriving and we're just practicing a sitcom and we don't find the writer.
Because you were working on Coronation Street.
And that's
why you got it.
You would never have been able to do that.
No, I was going to say, you wouldn't have got it, would you? And that car.
Yeah, the car bug.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I thought it was a great story, but it would have been better if we did it in front of a live audience.
An audience, I think they
realised. Was there any
that.
Problem then that you thought, oh, well, that didn't go well, we won't do a 10? Or
no,
they always thought they were going to do a 10?
It was a case of, look, if we're going to... They wanted to do it because it was the biggest viewing figures that the channel had ever had. So they wanted to do it, obviously, but it was us that said, look, if we're going to do it, let's do it properly and let's get back on board the ship. And there was no sets, you see, they didn't have any sets built. That's why Red Dwarf 9 was like, there was no sets.
That's why you're all over London,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, yeah. So we didn't have a studio, we didn't have a set. So it's like,
but Dave believed in it, the channel, yeah. Dave, yeah. They wanted it, you know, and they've backed it now. And it's great that 10 was good, yeah. And the 11 and 12.
They're hilarious, man.
They're good.
The newest one is fantastic as well. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's very good.
12's actually better as well. And you look at 11, you think you can't. That's like us back on form.
Especially
then
the last episode of 12.
Oh, was that when that old bloke turns up? Some old bloke turns up.
Unbelievable. You just see, he's dead, isn't he? No, he's not.
Isn't it?
So
I should have said that. I thought you were dead.
We're not allowed to say this. You didn't hear.
I thought you were dead.
And then he could have said, "Everyone's dead."
Everyone's dead.
Well, he did reverse. No, I mustn't give away.
No.
I don't want to give away any secrets for that. Yeah.
Some really clever stuff going on.
No, you take your hat off to Doug. Terrific, really, what he's done is terrific.
I mean, you've really been experimental comedy, really, over all of those years, not just an ordinary comedy show. I mean, the fact that you did episodes backwards, you did episodes with really weird, strange creatures.
It's a science bit, you know, so it's
very
like,
creative.
You know,
very
creative. It's like it's dealing with science fiction, it gives you so much scope to storylines and weird ideas. And you've got to realise that a lot. We started in the late 80s, and a lot of science fiction that we did then is actually now science fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
And it's like pushing forward, like the new stuff we're doing, like. Some of it will be science fact in 20 years' time,
So, it's incredible.
When you do season 52 or something.
He'll be
they brought back Peter Cushing in the new science Star Wars movie.
How old's Peter Cushing?
He's dead, Dave. You met him 3 months before. You don't remember that?
Of course, I met him in the lavatory. He died.
It's going to be time for
to get on the stage.
Come on, let's go and crash Robert anyway. I'm going to go crash Robert's last bit.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Is that okay then?
That's fantastic.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much.
That's brilliant. Interview bomber.
Hi, my name is David Naughton from An American Werewolf in London, and you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
I hope everybody enjoyed that conversation because I think it's lovely. It's a conversation. It's nice. Occasionally you hear us giggle or laugh, and occasionally we may ask the odd short question, but it was very entertaining. Craig was obviously, somebody was on stage, we were interviewing, and he was alone, so he wanted company.
So he found us.
Because we've interviewed Craig before, so...
Which you can go back and look at. In fact, we've also interviewed Robert Llewellyn and Danny John Jules and...
Captain Mac MacDonald.
Yes.
And we've interviewed a few more that have been in Red Dwarf, but we put them onto different shows because we want to spread them out.
Exactly.
And just before we go, Eugenia, we have to really say thanks to our friend Scotty Liston, who allowed us to have some great interviews with Craig and Norman.
That's right. And you can find Scott in Australia at firstcontactconventions.com.au.
And make sure you come along to his intimate conventions because they're damn good fun.
So I think that brings us to the end.
It does. Don't forget to visit our site, www.womentalksci-fi.com. If you happen to be getting us on iTunes or some other podcast reader, and if you really want to, you could leave a review on iTunes.
That'd be great.
That'd be nice. Or send us an email through our website.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from her, a very old UK theme. See you
it goes
time.
With the UK theme.
It does. Does. A bit of the comedy stuff coming out in the UK. So, see you next time.
And bye.
Bye.